Welcome to the BusinessAssurance.com podcast on carbon emissions. I'm Neville Hobson. The Carbon Expo, the global carbon fair and conference, which took place in Cologne, Germany from May the 2nd to the 4th, 2007, gave us the opportunity to talk to some of the world's key players on the climate change and carbon emissions front. During this carbon emissions podcast, we'll be hearing from the World Bank's leading expert on climate change and the UN's top climate change official. We have commentary from the European Union's most influential figure on climate change. A key US politician shares his thoughts on the integration of US and European trading schemes. We'll hear from the chairman of the UK's Emissions Trading Group, as well as a top representative of the United Nations Development Programme. Rounding out this podcast are one of the corporate world's most influential traders, as well as the publisher of Carbon Business Magazine. And finally, the leading technical expert from Lloyd's Register Quality Assurance, LRQA, the sponsor of this special edition podcast. They all bring up-to-date information and opinions on Phase 1 of the European Union Emissions Trading Scheme, the EU ETS, which runs through 2007, and Phase 2 from 2008 to 2012. We'll also hear thoughts about some of the key issues in the development of Phase 3, post-2012. First, here's Kristalina Georgieva, the Director of Sustainable Development at the World Bank, talking about the biggest obstacles facing the carbon market in the immediate future.
The biggest obstacle is the current relatively short time horizon. To achieve technology transformation, we need a much longer time horizon than we currently have. So we need success in the negotiations and post-2012 agreement for the market to blossom.
Ivo de Boer is the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC. Here he talks about the obstacles facing the carbon market beyond Phase 2 of the EU ETS.
I think the perspective that there is no investment opportunity after 2012, I think that's the main problem. Plus, I do think that in designing a post-2012 regime, there's a lot of simplification that we can do without jeopardizing environmental integrity.
And what about verification? What's the key role it plays in the carbon market? Ivo de Boer again.
Well, I think verification is essential because that ultimately safeguards the process as a whole to make sure that what's been done in the context of a CDM project is actually meaningful in terms of an environmental benefit. So you really need that verification, that check at the end, to make sure that it's a credible activity.
Jos Delbecq is one of the architects of the European Union's carbon emissions trading scheme. We asked him what are the key questions that should be addressed concerning all three phases of the EU ETS.
Well, the key question for all three phases will turn out to be allocation questions. And for Phase 3, the fact that heads of state have decided about the targets is extremely helpful, not only to decide Phase 3, but also to prepare the markets for Phase 3. For Phase 2, that's now clear, and I think that with all the caveats that you can put around it, that probably we got it relatively right. The Commission, together with the Member States, you know, these are communicating vases. It's not the Commission against the Member States. For Phase 1, we know where we are. We have to sweat it out for another 7-8 months.
Okay.
So far, the ETS has been the structuring factor of the global market. I think it is the ETS that is giving value to the CERs and to JI credits when they come on the market. That stays for quite a while, in my view, as long as there is a good balance between that international market and the ETS market. By then, we should have more clarity about other players in the market, what the Americans they are going to do, the Californians, the Australians, the Canadians. Different trading systems, but trading systems having an impact for sure on the CDMJI market. So I would be rather reassured for the medium-term perspective that we are well on track.
Among those attending the Carbon Expo event in Germany in early May were many non-Europeans. William Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, shares his views on the link of U.S. carbon emission schemes to the EU ETS.
Governor Schwarzenegger, who obviously is instrumental in setting up the California regime, and Governor Pataki, who is the founding genius of REGI in the Northeast, got together in December of last year and said specifically that they want to link California and REGI, and they want California and REGI together to link to the EU. Now, there are going to be some differences, the amounts to be handled through auctions and like questions, but the fundamental commitment is there to link to the EU. And that's not necessarily what you're hearing at the federal level today, but in my country we talk about the states as laboratories of democracy, and I think that's working again.
We also caught up with one of the carbon industry's leading experts, Bill Kite. Bill shares his thoughts about Phase 3 beyond 2012.
For the power sector, Phase 3 and beyond, and how the EU ETS develops over the next couple of decades is extremely important, because Phase 2 is extremely important for us as Phase 1 was in terms of operation, in terms of our day-to-day costs and our bottom line, but in terms of investment, the investments that we're making today and in the next decade will be with us to 2040, 2050. So therefore, to have some form of certainty about the regulations and the political certainty that goes forward is extremely important. The trouble is, whenever we talk about certainty, people say, well, what you want is price certainty. There's no way we can have price certainty. If you could tell me what the price of gas was next year, let alone in 20 years' time, we'd be extremely rich and I'd retire tomorrow. What we do need, though, is some idea of where the target is for 2050. Council of Ministers have given us 60 to 80%. What we now need is a predictability of the way we get there, on the way the ETS will shape up. We have a tremendous debate going on about how allocation. We have a debate whether there should be more auctioning in the future. There needs to be clarity. There is understanding amongst many major actors that auctioning in the long term is inevitable. Let's make it so. Set a target date when auctioning is 100% for everybody. Then we can explore the pathway there. Because the whole thing about the EU ETS is, to be effective, it's a policy that's got to be there for many years. We've had one transition phase. We have people now looking at putting other complications into it to cope with other issues. But we've got to make sure that all these are transitory. So if we have a clear idea where the EU ETS is going to be 2020, 2030, we can make transitions properly. That's for auctioning. If we knew there was going to be full auctioning in 2020, 2030, we know how to get from a maximum of 10% allowed to a mandatory, say, 100%, and we can manage that. And so I think the question changes very much the further you go out from a tactical issue, which basically for every company is, how can I get my hands on as many free allocations as I can, to a strategic issue of how the whole issue is going to develop. And obviously in that debate, you have then got the assumptions about how you move that debate forward, with the US coming in, the debate with India and China, but the EU ETS is central to it, and how that develops is very, very important to give Europe the certainty that it needs in order that we get the right power structure for it into the future. And that's why I think the debate about Phase 2 is almost over. Now we've got to really talk hard, and the Commission, given their credit, are doing it, about Phase 3. But we have to make some hard decisions about what's in Phase 3. We can't afford more uncertainty. And I think that's a broad view.
And what about the commercial sector? What do companies think about all the issues that were discussed at Carbon Expo, and indeed as you've heard in this podcast? Let's hear from Garth Edward, who is the trading manager for environmental products at Shell.
All right, so as regards how the trading market helps a company like Shell in terms of its compliance, it's a critical component. The trading market provides the price information that helps us allocate capital efficiently inside the company. We couldn't do it properly without the marketplace to give us that price signal. And really, it is the price signal which disciplines us, which lets us know whether it's better to invest a dollar internally through actions on sites, or whether it's better for us to spend $1 in the marketplace, effectively financing emission reductions outside of our company. So it's the price signal which allows us to understand that.
What outcome does Garth Edwards see from phase one of the EU ETS?
Yeah, phase one of the EU emissions trading system was, as they say, a learning phase. And, you know, I have some concerns about that phrase learning, because it wasn't pretend money that we were learning with. It was real money. But nevertheless, you know, good value was learned in the sense of lessons. Governments did establish a registry system, did establish a verification system, did establish a penalty system, and the market did get established. You know, price signals were established and companies ran their business accordingly. It seems, of course, in hindsight now, that the allocation was too generous, and prices for phase one have now gone to almost zero, really below €1. In phase two, of course, it's a different story. The lessons were learned from phase one, and a significantly tighter allocation looks to be developing out of the national allocation plan process. A lot of commentators are suggesting that will put about a $200 million a year short in the market from 2008 to 12. And that means that companies are going to have some work to do. Companies like Shell, of course, will be figuring out whether it's better, more cost-effective to make those reductions internally, or whether to look at them externally by buying them in the marketplace. And the marketplace, of course, will be not just in the EU, but through the CDM and joint implementation, which makes it international.
We asked Garth to give us his thoughts about pricing in phase two of the EU ETS.
Yeah, I guess as regards pricing in phase two, there are maybe sort of two parameters. On the one hand, if demand in the EU is below the supplementarity cap, that means that companies can, in principle, can in theory, import all the CERs and ERUs that they need for compliance, i.e. no action is required inside the EU itself. And if that is the case, the price for the whole of the phase two emissions trading system should be set by the marginal cost of creation of CERs and ERUs, which right now we could hypothesize is around 8 or 9, something like that. If, on the other hand, demand in the EU is greater than the supplementarity cap, which is $275 million a year, then you're looking at companies in the EU actually having to take actions, actually being forced to take actions to reduce emissions. And the one thing we learned from phase one is that those actions are going to be led by fuel switching from coal to gas. And we know that the cost of fuel switching in Europe is going to be a bit higher, and we're looking at the range of sort of 30 to 40 euros per ton, depending on fuel input prices at the time. So there's two parameters, something like 8 or 9 marginal cost of creating CERs or ERUs, or something like 30 or 40 marginal cost of creating EU allowances, effectively.
And what about verification and Shell's overall outlook?
Yeah, for a company like Shell, maybe Shell in particular, who has such a recognizable brand and therefore feels a certain exposure to that brand in terms of how Shell complies with legislation and maintains public trust and maintains a sense of transparency about its performance, you know, verification is essentially the fulcrum around which all that happens. So, you know, at a very simple level, we have verified emissions reports to be done under the EU emissions trading system, but also under many other environmental trading systems or environmental regulations that we comply with. So, you know, a good relationship with the verifier and the ability to make sure that verification timelines, deadlines are observed, and that the data is handled properly and turned around to governments in a way that's not going to risk our compliance. That's pretty essential stuff. So, you know, Shell rates verification very, very highly up its list of priorities.
The Clean Development Mechanism, or CDM, is an arrangement under the Kyoto Protocol, allowing industrialized countries with a greenhouse gas reduction commitment to invest in emission-reducing projects in developing countries as an alternative to what is generally considered more costly emission reductions in their own countries. Matt Spinnagle is with the UN Development Programme. He's going to be talking about developing countries and the CDM. He'll also talk about the UN Development Programme and the importance of verification in relation to the CDM and joint implementation, or JI, in developing countries.
The poorest of the world are the ones that will be most affected by climate change. They are also the people who have the least ability to adapt to climate change. United Nations Development Programme traditionally undertakes poverty reduction projects through official development assistance. We have realised in the past few years that there's no way that official development assistance is going to meet the needs of developing nations in addressing the changes that are coming due to global warming. We need to leverage additional finance, and we believe that the carbon markets are an effective way to do this. Verification is fundamentally important to the carbon market. Without verification, independent verification, there is no credibility of the emissions reductions produced. Without the credibility, the price will be flat, and hence a lower price means that there are fewer opportunities for projects to be developed, and therefore less ability for UNDP and other market players to bring people in the developing world out of poverty and provide sustainable development opportunities. UNDP believes that independent verification and credible market players who are the independent verifiers is fundamentally important to a strong and growing CDM and carbon market.
Jeremy Blow is publisher of Carbon Business Magazine. Here he talks about the magazine and some of the key issues he sees facing the carbon world today.
Hi, we've just launched Carbon Business, which is the world's first business publication for the business community on how they're facing the challenges of carbon as a real physical risk, which has been reflected in the markets, and how it can be developed in the long term as a regulatory tool. What they are having trouble doing is developing the methodologies to develop risk models in the lack of government regulation. So for them to understand, for example, how the verification process can add value to any existing asset development is extremely important for them. What Carbon Business does is it focuses the chief executives and the other boards of management on the various weaknesses within their actual supply chains, how they can develop the actual carbon strategies, which impact not only on them but their relationships outside of that with their peers, partners and customers. And there again, the lack of standards and the lack of a reporting system has really opened up a niche in the market for us here with Carbon Business. The markets are all very interesting, but now the markets can be seen just quite simply as a tool for business who can develop now the business case and return on investments, because before that you didn't have the possibility for it.
After the Carbon Expo, we caught up with Dr. Anne-Marie Warris, LRQA's leading technical expert on climate change. Here, she shares her thoughts on the Carbon Expo and the importance the event has on the carbon industry as a whole.
The fundamental is the Carbon Expo has changed dramatically since we came about 4 years ago. It's gone from a very small exhibition with a very clear focus on clean development mechanisms, which were just emerging in those days, into something much bigger. I mean, I don't have the figures, but it's grown at least 10 times in terms of size, in number of exhibitors, in number of visitors, in number of everything since that day. So that, I think, is a good signifying for saying what's happened to a carbon market. The carbon market is going from being a very small market, a market where very few trades happened, to what is a significant trader. And part of that is the development of the European Union Emission Trading Scheme. But I think you also got to say something for the vision of AITA and Kölner Messe for investing in this development and for now making it possible to have what is de facto the core event on the climate change agenda.
Finally, Anne-Marie ties it all together with her thoughts on the key challenges facing everyone in the carbon market.
The first thing is we are on the beginning of a new era, of a new exciting place to be. But we're also facing a huge level of challenge. Challenge not just for industries or for assurance providers or for government, but also for us as consumers. There's an issue which we, as each individual, have to start making carbon choices that we're not prepared to make yet, but we're beginning to think about. And industry can help with these carbon choices by helping to guide us, by helping to make the right decisions for them in terms of their carbon history. And government can help us in terms of making the rules simple and easy to work with and transparent and manageable. And clearly on top of all that, which is also part of the work we've done with WaterShore's consumers, there's an issue that says that verification is crucial. 70% of people said that for them it was very important that climate change claims were verified. And it's clearly important for us as an insurance provider to provide the right sort of service to deliver something that says, here is a ton, is a ton. But we need to do that in the least bureaucratic fashion and the most flexible fashion without losing trust in the market.
You've been listening to the BusinessAssurance.com podcast on carbon emissions, brought to you by Lloyd's Register Quality Assurance, LRQA. For more information on LRQA, visit www.lrqa.com. For information about Carbon Expo, visit www.carbonexpo.com. For detailed information about the world of carbon emissions, visit the International Emissions Trading Association, IETA, at www.ieta.org. A roundtable discussion from Carbon Expo featuring leading carbon emissions experts and Fiona Harvey, the environmental editor at the Financial Times, can also be found on the IETA website. We'd like to thank all the participants in this podcast for their time and insight. I'm Neville Hobson, thanking you for listening to this inaugural podcast in the new climate change section of the BusinessAssurance.com website. The new section also features a climate change blog, news on relevant topics, an extensive resources section, as well as a global events calendar. We welcome your input and feedback on this podcast or any other relevant topic. To share your views, click Add Comment at the bottom of any page at www.businessassurance.com.